Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio Scan Show, Stop Child Abuse Now, number 2411. NASCA has a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I am Linda Vitti, an advocate, counselor, and life coach from New Jersey, and I will be your host for this evening, so welcome. We encourage you to call in and be part of our panel. The number is 646-595-2118. Again, that's 646-595-2118. Tonight's special guest is Michael Caruso from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, who was sexually abused from 4 to 11 years old by several men where he grew up in Newark, New Jersey. My father was gone by age 2, he says, a heroin addict. My mom had me at 19 and didn't want a child, Michael says. There was no love or affection in the family. I was beaten till I bled with wood spoons by my mother, and my grandpa beat me as well. My aunt helped raise me, and she was like a best friend. I was rewarded like a dog. I developed a sexual addiction from the early exposure to sex at a young age. I still have a sexual addiction today that could hurt people if I don't remain aware of that trauma. I'm going to stop there because I want to hear the rest from him. He has quite a story. So let me bring him on. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Linda.
So glad you are here. You have an incredible story that I'm sure going to bless everybody. So what I'm going to let you do is I'm going to let you take it from the beginning. I'll guide you if you get stuck or get off on a track. And in about 10 minutes, I'm going to stop you, and then we're going to go to the panel, and they'll ask questions. Okay?
Great. Sounds good.
All right. Take it away.
Awesome. Thank you. Hello, everyone. I was born in New Jersey, 1968, and, it was in basically a single-family home. My mother got pregnant at a very young age. My father told me that he got my mother pregnant. He was tripping on acid the night that he got her pregnant, and she was young. She was 18, and then she had me at 19. I don't even remember my father being around because they said he was so messed up on drugs, and I just remember always, like, feeling out of place and not feeling, like, loved at a very young age. And my grandmother showed me a lot of love, but no one else did. We were basically a non-affectionate family. Linda said, I was rewarded, get good grades, you get this. There was no hugs and kisses and things like that. It wasn't like that. And it's funny because my mother was adopted. My aunt was adopted as well. My grandmother couldn't have kids. So there was a little mix of us all together, you know, with my grandmother being English, my grandfather being German, and then me and my mother being Italian. So it's a little bit of an oddball kind of family. I felt different right off the bat as well with that. But so anyway, I remember in the first grade or in kindergarten, I got in trouble in class for humping defeats and stuff. And I guess that really, you know, you weren't supposed to do that in public. And my grandmother always would smack my butt because everything I would go around, the floor, the sheets, anything, I would start humping on it. And, you know, this was, you know, I still remember this at a young age. And I don't know. I mean, I heard that's probably not normal. I might have been molested before the age of five. I don't remember that. But,
right.
You know, obviously, you know, being molested by the boys on the street as well. A couple of them held me down, you know, and stuff like that. Kids are experimenting. Yeah, you're experimenting as well as kids, but at the same time, I was forced to do this and forced to do that. And, you know, and they still took me under the wing. I was still friends with them. I never said anything. One guy threw bleach in my eyes one day, and, you know.
Oh, wow.
I had to explain to my mother what happened. And, you know, just, it was just horrible. So, but anyway, as I was growing up as well, I was also, my grandmother, you know, wanted to spoil me and, you know, and make me special. But I always felt like I was being, sheltered from something. Like, there was something that they didn't want to tell me. And a lot of this story has to do with spiritual stuff, as you know, Linda. And from a very young age, before I could even speak, I was seeing spirits and pointing to them on the wall. My aunt would tell me, and she'd turn around, and there the premonition would be. And that still has continued till today, and we'll get to that in a little while. But back to the sexual thing, it's just a little, this girl came over, she was 9 years old, I was maybe eight, and, you know, I stuck it in her, you know what I mean? And her mother came over and yelled at my family and said, what is your, you know, your son doing? You know, my daughter's bleeding, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I didn't know what I was even putting it in, you know, I just didn't. And, you know, and then when I moved down to Florida here, we moved out of Jersey, you know, we'll get once again the sexual addiction. You know, I met two guys down here, and, you know, they introduced me actually to Christ. And yet, you know, we would all, you know, have take turns on this 14-year-old girl. I was like 12 at the time, and these guys were a little older than me. And, you know, we would what they call run a train on her. And, you know, I was doing that at a very young age. On top of that, I was always hearing my mother have sex all the time. So that was really tough, too. Okay. She would burn through guys, just burn through a woman. And my mother never wanted me around. She would go out with her friends. She would meet me home with my grandmother. You know, she just was never around me. Now, I do remember the babysitters that babysat me. Oh, I was in love with them. Mona and Lisa. I won't say their last name, but they were twins, and they were awesome. I don't know. They would play around with me a lot, but I can't remember if it was anything, them touching me or anything like that as well. But so that's pretty much that part of it, you know, as far as the sexual thing coming up to that point. Now, I'll go over the spiritual stuff once again. You know, there was my like I said, I felt like I was being sheltered and hidden from things my whole life. Even till today, I don't know the truth about everything with my family. But my grandmother was a God-fearing woman, and she ended up finding pentagrams and the Satanic Bible in my grandfather's closet. And she went nuts. And I guess his parents ended up, you know, worshiping Satan. And my grandmother does not tolerate that. So they got in a big fight about that. My grandfather was an atheist. And I remember the day that happened. At the same time, I would always say goodnight to the monsters under the bed, the monsters in my closet. I really, really thought when I got older that that was all just something that a kid does. And I know it still happens to today, and there's so many instances that, you know, I can go into, but we won't do that tonight. But, you know, it still happens today. And so anyway, to make a long story short, I guess, you know, they went to go bury ashes in the backyard, and they thought it was the dog's ashes, and it wasn't. It was my grandfather's parents' ashes that they buried in North New Jersey, where I was brought up. And, you know, I guess that was built on an Indian burial ground. And, you know, from what I can see, a generational curse was put on the family. I was the first newborn. And it's not a coincidence because my sister goes through the same thing. Her daughter goes through the same thing. And we can get into the spiritual stuff as we go along here because I know, you know, this is about that too. But, you know, we're getting pulled. We get tormented all the time. We get touched. We get pushed. it's crazy. It's real. I mean, all of this is real, and everything is spiritual. And I've come to realize that nothing happens.
Michael,
starts in the flesh.
Let me stop you for one sec.
Sure.
Share with that you didn't grow up with your sister, correct?
I did not. No, I did not.
Okay, because you're experiencing some spiritual stuff with her, but you didn't grow up with her.
No, but here's the deal. I didn't grow up with her, but now that we talk, and I told you that, we ended up hanging out with each other finally about 10 years ago and getting to know each other intimate as well, which was an ancestral relationship, between the two of us. And, now she's really opened up and has told me that things are happening to her daughter. And I started telling her about the spiritual stuff that still goes on in my life. And she said, shut up. I'm like, why? She's like, Michael, it's been happening to me my whole life. My daughter gets pulled out of the bed. She's got scratches on her and handprints on her, like the movie The Conjuring. I'm like, no way. And it seems like there's just a curse in this family. Now, my sister has the same sexual addiction as me growing up and still has it today. And the only common denominator was my father. So,
right.
Kind of how I'm looking at that, so.
Okay, I'm going to stop
anyway,
here, and
yeah,
we're
sure.
going to go to the – We're going to go to the panel and let them introduce them, and then they're going to ask questions, and then we're going to come back
sure.
and go back more into your story. So let's go first to Bill in Florida. Hi, Bill. My wonderful co-host.
Hi, Linda. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Welcome. I'm doing good. I'm right up the road here in Pompano Beach.
Oh, great, great.
I don't identify with a great deal of the kinds of trauma that you went through, but with the feelings behind it, I certainly do. And that's pretty much what I want, the person that's listening tonight to key in on, because, a lot of us have different kinds of childhood trauma, but I'd say that they all have similar outcomes in adulthood with the feelings and the decision-making and the choices and all that. And they're different kinds of decisions, but they're all screwed up, is the point.
Right, right.
And that's what we have in common. And so I'm really glad to hear this. Now, there's a little bit of identification with the early part of your life, because I, too, was born to a young woman. In my case, she gave me up for adoption at 21. And I was adopted a few months old, adopted into a family where I didn't have any kind of genetic connection. So this part of your story I definitely identify with, because it had an effect on, some of my, how I saw myself. I mean, I was adopted into an Irish Catholic family that I'm sure I was loved in effect, but whether I could identify with that or not, I knew that there was a mystery about it. And in fact, I've only recently found out any part of my genetic background, and that was my mom's. I know nothing about my dad's, even to this day. Nothing.
Right.
So
right.
That part of your story I do identify with, and I'm sure there are others out there who hear things like this too, and they identify with it as well. But the feelings, the thinking, the choices, the decisions, that's like blueprint,
Right, right.
I appreciate you being here, Michael.
Thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Michael, I want to tell you some of the things you described as a child, that you were doing sexually is something that it is not within your control, basically. It's you're dealing with feelings in the body. You're dealing with sensations in the body that you didn't understand. You didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't understand why that you were feeling those things because of the abuse. I want the listeners to know that's not something that you really had control over at that age.
No.
So let's go to Darlene in Tennessee.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Darlene.
Hello. Thank you for sharing your story. I know it is tough telling your story. And I will relate to some of this stuff based on what I had read in a little about you.
Mm-hmm.
My stepmom was satanic as well.
Mm.
So we got that in common.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, I guess that's enough said at the moment. So.
Well, thank you, dear. I appreciate it. Yep. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Thanks, Darlene. Okay. So I'll let you pick it up and take off again.
Okay. So, okay, so I moved down to Florida here, and, you know, we come down to, you know, the new house where I'm living, and I explained to you guys I would have threesomes with the girl on the block, and, you know, I just was constantly masturbating all the time. I mean, you know, just and fantasizing. And actually fantasizing actually about my mother, which they say is normal at first when you're real young, when you have a young mother that's only 19 years apart. But it kept going into, you know, later in my life. And I still have not figured that out. But she was beautiful. My mother is beautiful. I looked up to her, you know, green eyes, you know, the big boobs, the beautiful smile, very vain. And I wanted to be like my mother. I never had a man around me. I was brought up by women. And I was sharing that with you as well, Linda, that, you know, God has put some amazing women in my life at the moment, you and another, you know, friend of mine. And, you know, I just, you know, anyway, I just looked up to my mom a lot. But at the same time, like, she was still burning through guys when we got down here to Florida, one after another after another after another. And then I hear in the room having sex. So, you know, when I became...
How old were you?
Well, this is 12. This is still going on now at 12, 13, 14. You know,
wow,
all the way up to
wow.
about 15. That's when I started going off the hook in 15. You know, I started dating my first girlfriend. You know, I was an okay-looking kid at that time and pretty popular, but, you know, I found the group I wanted to hang out with, and it was the Stoners, and that's when I started doing drugs, and I got expelled a year later. And I was expelled at 15. And, you know, had to go work at Hardee's and, you know, and then started having sex with, you know, more girls and stuff like that. And, you know, and I would say, I was telling you, Linda, I picked up such a heavy drug addiction that one of my friend's mothers was one of the biggest cocaine dealers in Central Florida. And I didn't really even know it at the time, but you know, she was moving 2 kilos of cocaine a week. So I would go over there, and she would just have me stay there all night. She would pack my nose with cocaine. We'd do about 10 grams in 2 days. And then I started feeling the arousal with my penis with the cocaine, and I was like, wow, this is cool, you know. And then I started really getting perverted about it, you know. And at 16, wanting to have sex with, you know, Marilyn, who, you know, was the dealer. And, you know, because she was like, you know, maybe 39, 40, you know, at that time. So, yeah, so I was doing that. And I know my mother and my grandmother were worried about me because I would never come home, but nobody could control me. I did what I wanted to do. I didn't have anybody to tell me what to do. so I was very rebellious at that time. Now, I did go ahead and get my GED, and I did date a girl, you know, when I was about 17, or I was 18, I got my GED, and she was still in 11th grade. And so we started doing cocaine together and having sex together. We wouldn't even have sex unless we were doing cocaine. So it tells you, you know, how powerful that drug is. And that was at a very young age. So, she had a couple seizures. She almost died. You know, I got banned from ever seeing her again. Her family had to come pick her up at a hotel room. She was a minor. And back then you didn't get in trouble for that. I was 19. She was 17. And that was where it all started. Now, I was also telling you my story as well, and I know I'm skipping around a little bit here because there's so much to tell. I'm trying to squeeze in as much as I can in this amount of time. That, you know, probably around the age of 18, 19, you know, I created this character that I am now. And I say that because I did not want to remember anything before, you know, probably around that age, and maybe before 16. I just wanted to forget it and put it in my past. And now at this time, I was kind of a late bloomer. All of a sudden, at 19, 20 years old, I became this beautiful-looking man, and you know, and where everybody wanted to be around. And that was the other thing I was telling you yesterday, Linda, as well. From a young age, everybody wanted to hang out with me because I had the most toys on the block. And as I got older, it's because of the way I looked and what I did for a living. Nobody ever really wanted to hang out with me for me. You know, they all wanted to hang out with me to get something from me.
What did you do for a living at that time?
I was a male dancer. I was with the second biggest male dance group in Central Florida, All American Male. The only other group that was bigger than us that we competed against was Suncoast Calendar Men, which the movie Magic Mike is about. So I actually worked with Mark Consuelos as well, so it was great. Kelly Ripa's husband. But, you know, at that time, I really started abusing my sexual behavior because there was nothing that I couldn't have. There was no one that I couldn't touch. And it was up to maybe three women a day at some times. And all I knew was feelings. And if you were my girlfriend and we weren't having sex, I did not think that you loved me because I got all of my feelings and all my care and my love from having sex with you. So, and I abused that
you
power.
You equated that. You equated it.
Right. Exactly.
You equated sex with love.
Exactly. There you go. Sex with, that's right. If I'm not having sex with you, then you don't love me. Yep. And, but when I knew that I could do whatever I want, I would have people from the owners of the bars and stuff take me out in the limos, and they would point at the girls and they'd be like, we want her, and her, go get them. And we'll come back with all three of them, boom, they jump in the limo. I mean, I just had so much, I call it the force, like, you know, but I used the dark force, you know, and I used it for my advantage to manipulate women, to hurt them, to drag them through the mud, to, you know, use them. I didn't care about any girl I ever dated. I only dated them because what can you give me? You make $100,000+ a year, you drive a $70,000 car, cool, I'm going to be your boyfriend. And then I would run them into the mud. I was a narcissist. I would turn on them. I would pick out every fault that they had in them, and I would use it against them. I don't know where all that hate and anger came from, though. I got to be honest with you, that I've had through the years towards women, and ended up doing that. I just don't know. And the other thing I skipped over is my mother ended up getting murdered when I was 19 as well. That was real, real tough. So she had me at 19. She was murdered when I was 19. Kind of weird. I'm just saying.
Wow.
She was a diamond dealer and shot in the head twice. She was shot in the head twice. She was a jewelry dealer. Yep. She owned her own nail salon. She was finally getting it together. She wanted to marry this guy and settle down finally, and he wouldn't marry her. And, you know, my mother started, you know, selling diamonds on consignment. And, you know, back then, you know, they didn't have cameras and everything. The guy came in and he looked at him and he came, saw her two more times. And, you know, they went and got the diamonds appraised in Winter Park, Florida. And, you know, he said, why don't you get in the car with me and we'll go grab the money and I'll drive you back off to your nail salon. Well, why wouldn't my mother get in the car? You know, I mean, you know, she's already been there three times. You'd be stupid to do anything. And sure enough, he shot her twice in the head, one in the temple, one in the side of the head, and then dumped her body off 20 miles up the road. And a big manhunt was on that night, and they ended up finding her body 3 weeks later, decomposed, with two other dead bodies that this guy killed. He was a sociopath. If any of you want to look it up, you can Google Georgia Caruso murder 1987. And I also started a nonprofit. I became friends with the son of the guy who murdered my mother.
Let me stop you before you get into the nonprofit.
Sure.
We've been going about 10 minutes. So
we'll
go back to the panel and we'll come back to you. So let's go to Bill in Florida first.
Yeah, thanks, Linda. Now, more identification is occurring with me because Michael is a man who is admitting to his pursuit of the feeling of his sex, you know, the sexual feeling, the climax, basically, and the power behind that, which I certainly identify with, too. And I think perhaps it will help some other men to hear that, you know, we're willing to talk about these issues. I'm sure, you know, one of my first conquests, if you want, was a woman that was 13 years older than me, not related to me. She was a next door neighbor of my parents.
Right.
And when I was in my, it was probably my early 20s, she was in her 30s, in her mid 30s, and she had two kids and a husband. And the husband traveled to Europe a lot. So I started having an affair with her, and we eventually made a plan and actually moved her stuff and my stuff to an apartment in New York City, and this is up in Connecticut.
Wow.
We moved all the way to New York, and then I realized we spent one night together in the apartment that we had found and gotten together, and I realized this was not going to work. And I went back home, and I told my father what I had done, and he couldn't believe it. He said, what do you think? What if her husband has a gun, and he comes over here and shoots you? I didn't even think of stuff like that, you know. It just wasn't relevant. Because I was in pursuit of the sexual experience.
Yep.
And thank God, I mean, we went back up to the apartment. My dad and I loaded up all her stuff that had been moved there, brought it back to our garage and left the door open. for she and her husband to come over and take it back to their house. And thank God that was the end of it. But I could have been, like my father said, you don't know what he's going to do. I didn't think that way. Because I was just in pursuit of, in my case, it was proving my masculinity, part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had been abused by all men in my youth, a lot of sexual abuse. But it was all men and a lot of pornography by men. And so my quest for women, which went on now for years after that, was all about the sexual experience. And it was a girl a night. A girl would stay with me two nights. Maybe the long relationship was 2 weeks. That was it, you know. And all through my 20s, that's how it was. And it was all about proving to myself that I was worthy and not, first of all, heterosexual, which I turned out to be, but also worthy of attention and love. So I get all of this stuff, Michael, and I hope other men are listening, because I want them to hear a couple of males who are willing to talk about this as openly as we possibly can. I mean, my life, like yours, is an open book, and I'm ready to use any part of it that would be helpful to anybody else. So I know that's how you are. You've been with us before, Michael. God bless you for doing this again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Bill. You're welcome. My pleasure.
Okay, Darlene in Tennessee.
Hey there. I know it's tough knowing about your mother passing away, and I'm glad that the neighbor did not end up getting rid of you, Bill. We wouldn't have NASCA today.
That's true.
And I think it's very brave of men to acknowledge that this happened to them and get it out. It's brave even of the ladies, but men, they supposed to have not show their feelings, or they're too girly if you show emotions and all this other kind of bull crap, you know. But that's just what they were taught. That's what they were taught, you know.
Yep.
So kudos to y'all for breaking the silence.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks, Darlene.
You know, I wasn't taught anything. Okay. Let me just say this to Darlene. I wasn't taught anything. That's the problem. I was given absolutely no direction, and nobody knew about the sexual assault I'd gone through until later in my life. And without direction, this is where I went, because I was a broken person in pursuit of finding anything that would help make me feel fixed. And one thing that helped me fixed was the conquest of women. That's what I call it. It really was. And I apologize for that to the women out there, but I mean, they were complicit. I didn't force anybody. And this was an age when, you know, it was flower children and love and sex was pretty common, but still, I know now that I wasn't there. I wasn't there to find my permanent relationship. I was there to get over. That's it. You know?
I know. I'll say this right quick. I know there's a lot of women who probably had done the same excursion, Bill. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to prove that there's sexuality and stuff, and they can be loved and desired, you know?
Right, exactly.
That's true.
Thanks, Darlene. You know, I got to say, the thing I'm thinking of for the listeners that are listening right now is what you're sharing about how you went out for conquest. Like, it wasn't about you never thought of the other individual. And I know some of the damaged women that are listening, like, when you get into relationships, you have to look at your partner, because, you know, damaged people find damaged people.
Exactly.
And it's not that you intentionally wanted to hurt women. You were just trying to meet your own needs.
Correct.
Right. So, listeners, we have to be aware. We have to be aware as, you know, survivors that we're all damaged and we're looking to fill our needs in different ways. And we have to really look into that. So let me ask you this real quick before you go on. How did you respond to your mom's murder?
Oh, wow. Well, I tell you, the night that they called, my grandfather called me at my girlfriend's house, and he never would call there. And her mother was like, "Your grandfather's on the phone." I got on the phone, and he's like, "You need to come home right now." And I got there, and the detectives were there, and they told me that they found her body. And I still remember I dropped to my knees, and I started crying. And I went to the bathroom, and I dumped out the rest of the cocaine I had, which was about a gram. I did it all in one line and came out, and just I was just very angry. Very, very angry. I held that anger for years. I was so mad at God. I was like, there's no God. There's no way there's a God, because, you know, my mother gave her life to the Lord. She went to exorcism. She was trying to teach me the Bible as she got older. You know, she really was trying to change, and she was changing.
Right.
And, you know, I was just very, very angry. For a very long time. You know, when they caught the guy and I was going through the court cases, I was getting in a lot of fights. And, And I was, that's when the paranoia started kicking in with the cocaine. I never got paranoid, but after my mother was murdered, I was paranoid. So, I would walk around with a poacher mice getting high and, it's crazy. So I will tell you this, though. Some of the demonic stuff that has happened in my life, when I inhaled crack cocaine, it came immediately back. I'm telling you, that drug opens you up to bad, bad spirits. There's no doubt about it.
But it was very hard.
I'm going
to let you just keep going.
Okay. So anyway, I know I'm skipping around, guys. I've never shared this part of my story. That's why I'm a little nervous jumping around. So please bear with me.
Okay.
So... I look at all the mental disorders still today, okay, which I think there's about 9 of them, and, I have probably 7 of them, and I'm admitting that. Narcissism was my biggest one, okay? I could not stop looking in the mirror wherever I went. I mean, even, you know, I got fired from my male dance group for getting naked. They said, "That's the last time you're doing it, you got to go," and, you know, I said, "All right, no problem." I didn't want to be a male dancer anymore anyway. So they ended up calling me the night before the next show, and they're like, "We have so many requests for you. We need you to come back." I was like, "Huh, that's funny. Pay me this amount of money." So, you know, stuff like that always happened to me to where I could always say, "Ha, ha, ha, yeah," you know, and that made me even more arrogant, more egotistical.
Sure.
At the same time, I know ego eases God out, but I always knew that there was something very powerful watching over me, along with a dark spiritual attachment, though, at the same time. So, you know, I became a womanizer, I really didn't even know what that meant until, you know, a few years ago. But, boy, I think because I saw my mother doing it to men, I decided to do it to women. That's what I'm kind of figuring out with myself, that I would watch her burn through women. Also, so guys, so let me burn through these girls, you know. I would do things like, you know, this week I'm going to sleep with a girl from 7 different countries, okay? One from Thailand, one from Japan, one from Russia, one from, Indonesia. And I do it. And I did it. And it was like a game to me. And, you know, I never wanted to be alone. I could never be without a girlfriend. I could never not cheat on my girlfriend. And it was just crazy. My whole life, the only thing that I've done right since I've gotten out of prison 2 years ago is not get in a relationship. And I've done very, very minimal of sleeping with anybody. Matter of fact, I haven't slept with anyone this year, which is a shocker for me. And, you know, if you told that to anyone in South Florida, they would say, "He's lying." You know, he slept with half a South Florida. He's lying. But that reputation will never leave me. You know, it's not who I am today.
Right.
My character is who I am today. So, but so back on the other stuff. If you guys, I'm sorry. You want me to go ahead?
No, I was just going to say, I just wanted to add, but we always have the opportunity to change and heal no matter where we are, no matter what we've done, no matter what has happened to us. So I just wanted to get that out. Go ahead.
Yes. Okay, awesome. So through growing up, okay, and then using my looks and my charm, okay, which I call it the power of persuasion, okay, there's no doubt about it. I never read the book. I didn't need to. I was born with it. I don't know how I learned it. You know, I'm a little bit different. My beliefs are a little bit different than a lot of Christians. So, I do believe I've been here before. So there's too many things that are coincidental. Things that have happened to me of me, you know, not being there before. But I realized it's a power that you have with, the way people get treated because the way they look and the way they talk and the way they act is sick. Okay, that's how society judges you. And, you know, mm-hmm. one of my pictures went viral on Facebook 7 months ago. And, you know, 1,000 friend requests a day. I mean, it was ridiculous. Now, I built some good relationships with these people. But, I mean, I have 20-year-old girls masturbating lies, you know, to me at least 5 to 10 times a day. It's ridiculous. I'll be driving in the car and they'll come up video chat and I'll click it and I'll show my friends. I'm like, look, here's another one. It's just unbelievable.
Wow.
And I'm just like, yeah. But they don't care. They don't know the monster that is asleep inside me. And I say that because I don't feed that monster at the moment, you know, and I don't want to ever feed that monster. But let me tell you something. Every girl I've ever wanted to date, I told you, had to have money or she needed to be a news anchor on TV. I dated them. You know, when Basic Instinct came out, I said, I'm going to date a girl that looks just like Sharon Stone. And I did, you know, and I just was able to do that. There was never, I never heard the word no, ever. So, you know, and I barely hear it now if I wanted, I mean, because it's just gotten crazier. I thought you'd be washed up at 50 years old, but everybody still wants to just look at the outside, Linda. Like, you know, I was telling you, like, you know, if one more person, you know, tells me on my Facebook, you're so sexy or you're so beautiful or this and that, I'm like, can you just look a little deeper? You know what I mean? Like, instead of
just looking at the outside
of me, because if you knew what I could do to you and drag you through the mud and wreck your life and ruin your bank account and wreck your car and belittle you and make you more insecure than you even are, the evil person I was, okay, they don't even understand. And I never want anybody to ever see me like that again, Linda. I can tell you about it. And some people are like, no way, you were never like that. You know, even when I tell people I'm a recovering crackhead, they look at me and they laugh. They're like, yeah, right. You know, crack cocaine doesn't discriminate. Just because I took care of myself and my teeth are all together, it doesn't mean I wasn't just as sick, if not worse. When my grandmother died, she left me $200,000. I immediately had access to $30,000. I spent $30,000 in 30 days on hookers and hotels and crack cocaine. You know,
wow.
I was just sick. I mean, the addiction was so bad. And for years, it was so bad. And that's all I wanted to do was watch pornography, have sex with women, and do drugs. That was the most enjoyment of my life, you know. And it's very hard to have sex sober now because not as good of a feeling as when you're on Molly or on ecstasy or coming down off cocaine or meth. At least you don't think it is. You know, I know it's going to take some time to get those feelings back. But, yeah, so that's real tough for me as well.
Wow.
So anyway, today, like I said, I went to prison because I dated a girl who made $140,000 a year and had the nice car and moved me into her house and gave me the American Express, and she had a cocaine habit, and, you know, we would lock ourselves in the room from Thursday to Sunday and, you know, have sex, videotape it, got all the toys and the drugs, and, you know, hey, it was a match made in heaven. But I never loved her, you know. I did fall in love with her eventually, but, you know, I wanted to be with her because of what she had. And make a long story short, I went to jail for domestic, and I ended up getting sent to prison for it because I violated. So, you know, karma. I really believe in karma. I took her for $50,000. I got her for $50,000, and I got her to invest in something, and I ended up making like $21,000. That was my profit. She didn't know that. So, I mean, how much of a scumbag am I for doing that? And, you know, but in return, my brand new car that I bought cash got stolen with all my clothes. I came out of prison with a pair of underwear. So, you know, karma, I do believe in karma, that you will, you know, pay for the things that you have done if you keep doing these things. So, yes, I've been very, 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 very picky about who I go out with and who I date. You know, I know I told you I was going to go see this girl, you know, in South Carolina. And the night before I went, she acted up, and I was like, wow. Thank God you acted up now before I got there. So, and, you know, I worked my place down here in an Italian restaurant. I'm a bartender, you know, by trade as well. And, you know, the most beautiful girl, her name was Angie. She would come in every night. And my boss would be like, you know, she's here to see you every night, right? She's like, she's gorgeous. Why aren't you going out with her? I said, have you seen what she looks like after she's had a couple drinks? I said, watch what she looks like. And I would have my girlfriends, other bartenders that worked at the bar, I would have them keep an eye on her too. And they would walk up to me and be like, Michael, she's on something more than alcohol. So, you know, with that being said, I could not get involved with another person like that just because they have a Tiffany bracelet and a Louis Vuitton purse and the True Religion jeans and a nice car and they're beautiful. No, no, no. That's because it just would be sick. Sick, sick, sick for me. And, can't do it. So I don't care if somebody works at McDonald's now. I just I know normal, I don't even know what normal is. I know it's a setting on the washing machine, but as far as me being a recovering addict, I don't know what normal is. So, but I can't do crazy anymore. I got to really, really be careful about, you know, getting involved in something like that. Because I ended up in jail, because of my abuse of women. I've been arrested over 23 times, probably 18 for domestic. So, when I come down off the bus, I put my hands on them. I've never punched them or anything like that, but I grabbed them. Everything has pretty much been a misdemeanor, except for this last one was a felony, and that was strangulation, and which there wasn't even a mark on her neck. I could have beat the charge. I was so discombobulated sitting in jail because I was doing so many drugs for that year. I didn't even know what was going on, and I ended up, like I said, going to prison. It was probably the best thing for me. And when I went to prison, I was actually in a church service with 1,000 guys there, and they're all guys. And I'm telling you, the preacher walked up to me in the middle of the crowd and said, "I don't know what God has in store for you, son, but you got the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost all over you." And I've heard that my whole life as well, that, God has something special for me to do. And, you and I talked about that, Linda, as well, is reaching out and helping other people. This is just a brief part of the story to share with you guys. I'm going to do a book, and it's so much deeper than what I'm sharing with you. I mean, deep, deep. It's just very hard to go into detail because it would take a very long time. But, as far as, like I said, the guys that introduced me to the Lord that got me saved were some of the ones that I was having, child molestation with me, and, and having sex with the girl and stuff like that. Matter of fact, one of them went to prison for counseling a 14-year-old girl, and he's getting out in like 2 or 3 years now. So, that came to bite him in the butt. But the other one I'm still good friends with, and has his own church. I would never want to hurt him and bring that up. I mean, hey, bygones are bygones, I would never do that. But,
Let me stop you. Sure. Mm-hmm. And sure. We're going to go back to the panel again.
Okay.
We still have over 45 minutes, so you got plenty of time. So let's go to Bill, my wonderful co-host.
Well, to fill in a little more of, my identification here and my story, I also am a heavy alcoholic drug user. I used all the drugs, including cocaine, but when it came to cocaine, I got scared. Now, this was in the era when cocaine was just becoming popular in the late 70s. And when I went to California in 1980, I ended up living with a guy who was pushing a little bit of dope, not the quantity that you're talking about, Michael, but he told me, a part of the reason that he wanted me to live with him was on occasion he wouldn't be there and he wanted me to hand people stuff through the door. And I told him I wouldn't. I was scared. I was terrified.
Right.
And one night he left and he said, "Just give the guy that's coming over this envelope and take the envelope he gives you. You won't have to deal with anything." And I knew it was a drug sale. I said no. And I didn't answer the door. And the guy ended up screaming and yelling in the front yard and then down on the street. And then the police came and picked him up, and I was gone the next day. But that's how I was not going to even participate, because I was instantly hooked in both New York, where I was living before, and then instantly in California again, being around coke. And I could not believe the power of coke. And it terrified me. But I did all the other drugs and all the alcohol you can believe, and I sobered up. Took another 4 years or so. 1984, I sobered up, and I've been sober and clean ever since. But it has not been an easy ride, I gotta tell you that. And and of course, in the process of getting clean and sober, I also started working on my child abuse issues. So it's been quite a while. What a journey this is, Michael.
Wow.
And it's okay. I like what Linda said before. No matter how far down the scale you've fallen, you can get back up and get back on.
Absolutely.
Get back up and move in the right direction. So,
no,
God bless you
for
telling
your
story so honestly.
Thanks, Bill. You're awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, Darlene in Tennessee.
Sure. Yes, I know there's – I just all of a sudden had a feeling that there are a lot of people who are listening to the podcast right now who want to call in. So, Linda, can you give them the number? Because I just
absolutely
got a feeling that
let
they
will. Let me do
won't
that right now, Darlene. The number to call in is 646-595-2118. Again, 646-595-2118. Thanks, Darlene.
You're welcome. I just, all of a sudden, it just hit me. I'm like, I know. I just got that feeling. You know, it's so powerful, this story is. And I'm sure some people want to come in here and support you and, you know, and just say some things. But some of them might not want to really speak, and I'm urging them to come on and get involved, you know.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. Thanks, Darlene. Okay. You got it. We got about 45 minutes left, so wherever you want to go with it.
Sure. Okay. So, like I said, I'm gonna jump back to the spiritual stuff that's going on with me. So, all through my life, there's been something connected to me, and girls that I dated have they've seen it. They felt me and getting pressed into the bed and stuff like that, and have flipped out about it. But ever since a young age, my grandmother always knew that I was telling her the truth when stuff spiritually would happen to me and they were demonic, and she would go out and get the holy water and she would sprinkle it in the room. And I was just like, what is the deal here with me? Like, I kind of like was growing up, and I don't say this to be arrogantly, but am I like the one? You know what I mean? Like, why is this happening to me and it doesn't happen to other people? So I let that go. And, so my big old ego's going, through my 20s and, and through my 30s. I ended up going to treatment at 27 years old. We know that 27 is the age that everyone dies who are rock stars. Yeah. So, long list, but I ended up going to treatment or I would have died. There's no doubt about it. And when I got out, I had no idea what I was going to do for a living. I was 28 years old at the time. I'd never done anything in my life except, let people touch me and look good, you know what I mean? Or sing. I was a singer, so that's what I did. I was an entertainer for years. And what am I going to do now? 28. I'm so old. I remember taking a job for $6 an hour, working in a kitchen. I'm like, oh, this sucks. Then I found my next stage, bartending. And I hit that platform. And, once again, there you go. Sleeping with all the women. I ended up moving out to Meridian, Mississippi in 2005 and doing a recording project with Peavy. And let me tell you something. If my ego wasn't big before I got there, it was really big there because I was the only Italian in Meridian, Mississippi. Matter of fact, they never even met anybody from New Jersey who was Italian. In that little town. They told me, they said, you talk funny. I'm like, I talk funny? You talk funny. So, it was just, they were lining up. They were lining up. And so, once again, I fed that addiction. And I was feeding that addiction without using drugs. I was just drinking a couple pills here or there. And what I say by not using drugs is my drug of choice, crack cocaine, is the thing that took me down all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I could build up a bright future myself. I get well very, very quick when I get clean. And but, boy, let me tell you something. When I touch crack cocaine, it goes really, really quick. So I'm in Meridian, Mississippi, and, sleeping with everybody. And I end up seeing, this one girl came in the bar. I'm like, oh, who's that? They're like, oh, she's the news anchor on such and such, TV station. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. So I talked to her, and I said hi to her boyfriend and stuff and blah, blah, blah. And, and I left it at that. And I got home that night, and the bartender called me. He's like, Renee asked about you. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, she gave me her number to give to you. I was like, okay, cool. And that's exactly what I wanted. So, I ended up dating her. And now I'm with, one of the she's a star in that area, so my head's even bigger. And I go home with a 21-year-old girl one of those nights, and she didn't come over. At 20 years old, she was actually. I was 40. Wait, 2006, I was how old? Let me see, I was 38. And one of my friends came home with me, too, so we ended up running a train on her. And the next morning, I got a phone call from a boyfriend saying that she went and pressed rape charges and that he raped her, and that the cops were going to interrogate me. And I was like, oh, my God. So, the police did call me and stuff. They're like, you're going to have to go down and make a statement and blah, blah, blah. Oh, I had to go tell Renee. I was like, I can't believe this. So I went and I had to tell her. I was like, listen, this is what happened, babe. And I told her the truth. And, she understood, and she was just really cool. She, matter of fact, she's the only girlfriend in my life that still talks to me. And I told her I was doing the show. She's amazing. And,
you know, I had to tell her. And we got down to the police station. They said, don't even worry about giving your statement. They're like, this girl has so many holes in her story. They're like, we know you didn't do it. I said, okay. But, you know, it's a very embarrassing moment. And anyway, I ended up, you know, being at a gas station and drinking. We all know that once you start drinking, your guard's down from your drug of choice. And I saw a little black guy there, and he asked me to borrow a couple dollars. And I said, oh, you're smoking crack, man. I said, here's $5. I gave him the $5. And my boss was with me, and he's like, you're funny, man. He's like, I'll see you tomorrow night at work. I said, all right. He left, and I looked back, and there was the little black guy. So I went over to the little black guy, and I said, yo, I said, I got all this money. I showed him the pocket. I'm like, I got a couple grand in the bank. Take me to go get some crack and some hookers. And he did. And I disappeared for like 4 or 5 days. You know, Renee didn't know where I was. Mm-hmm. She ended up looking everywhere for me. You know, nobody could find me. You know what we do. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. And then I would force her to take me to Crackdown at the middle of the night, at 12 midnight. She would get in the car, and I would steer her car to make her go in the other direction. I'd tell her I want to go to the store and get something to eat, and then I would steer her car to the wrong direction. She could have lost her job to mm-hmm. the hood. And, you know, I remember one time I got her a little Yorkie, and she was looking for me, and she brought the Yorkie to the crack dealer's house. And the dog got scared and jumped out of her arms and broke its little leg on the front porch. And I'm just like, oh. So I got to the drug dealer's house that night, and he's like, I'm going to punch you in your big Italian nose if you don't get out of here and go home to your girl right now. And he told me what happened. And I ended up going back, and she took me back again. Make a long story short, she landed another contract somewhere else, and I couldn't go with her. So she's like, you got to go somewhere else, and then, you know, we'll still see each other. And I ended up going to Pensacola, Florida. And, you know, she came to see me, and I was gone. I was in a crack house for like 3 days. She drove all the way from this, you know, place she moved to, you know, Florida to see me with, you know, little gifts and stuff, and left them at my apartment and said hi to my roommate and said, all right, I'll see you. And she left. And shortly after that, I went to treatment, and then I went to go stay with my father in 2006 and 2007. My dad said I could come out there and stay with him. He just divorced his wife, who I could never get along with. I couldn't stand her. And so me and my dad ended up hanging out and getting high together. And my sister, I started finally getting to know my sister. And I came home drunk one night. My sister was laying in bed with her baby. And I walked in there and I said, I'm going to F the crap out of you. And I said it in a statement, kind of just kidding around. And she picked the kid up and put it on the other side of the bed, and you know, that happened, and it happened repeatedly over and over and over. Yeah, so my father caught us actually in his bed doing it. That was a very embarrassing moment. Yeah, and then me and my dad got high together. We smoked crack together. I got a cocaine together. We did heroin. Yeah, it was a complete mess. It was so horrible. And anyway, after when I was out there and I was doing all that, I ended up coming home for Christmas. To my aunt's house to eat dinner there, and or to have Christmas dinner there, and I ended up meeting this girl Jen, who is my aunt's best friend's daughter. Opportunity. See, I'm an opportunist. I'm an opportunist, so I know when I can move in on something. So I got this girl's number and I started talking to her about working, and you know, all of a sudden I got her to fall in love with me. She was just, pack your stuff and come live with me, come back to Florida, and I did. That was my ticket out. I went there and moved in with her. I ended a great job on the water. Started taking her car to work every night and going out with all the girls after work. And before you knew it, I left her, and that was another girl, you know, who partied and did drugs and wasn't strapped down with the kids. And, you know, and that was lasted 2 years. And then I went to Vegas to get away from that because, you know, I need to get away. My friend was in Vegas. I jumped around like a gypsy from 2005 to 2009. And then 2009 to 11, I stayed in Florida, and then I flew out to Vegas in 2011, and then I ended up coming back here to South Florida and staying permanently here in since 2011. And when I got back here in 2011, you know, I you know, slept around a little bit, and then I ended up dating the same girl for 4 years. And but she's 13 steps. She was a year and a half. She was a year and a half clean, and I was 2 weeks clean. Beautiful. She's the mother of NA down here, 13 years younger, gorgeous. I mean, gorgeous. Russian Mexican, blue eyes, but just like me. She's the exact version of me, the female version. And it was really scary. Mm-hmm. We were completely other sentences, and her sexual addiction was as bad as mine. And wow, we just, it was great. And that was the thing that binded us together. I ended up getting her pregnant, and I wanted to keep the kid, and she said she didn't want it, and I cried. I really wanted to keep it.
But, oh, wow.
I can't, I wasn't going to force her, so I had to pay to get the abortion. And anyway, the whole time I'm using, and we moved to Coral Springs because it's a better school for her son. And, I'm constantly using. And she started getting away from her, her support group. And one night I went to go, I said, let's go to so-and-so's and go eat. And I went to the bar and I ordered a shot of, shot of Jägermeister. And she said, I want one too. And I was like, Chris, no, don't do it. She's like, I'm okay. I'm like, Chris, it's 2.5 years. She's like, I'm good. And, like I was about to say, people tell you the monster that they can become. I never knew that the monster of what she was going to become. And, that night we ended up getting cocaine and the sex was just crazy. And the next day it trickled down. And before you knew it, you were doing more and more drugs and not paying the rent. And then her and I got in a fight one day and I broke her son's TV. She stabbed me in the Coral Springs police zone. It was a mad search for her because I'm walking outside. I have a knife in me. Oh, it was just horrible. She went to jail for almost an attempted murder. I ended up getting her off the charge. But, and then she started escorting. And, then I wanted to get her in trouble because she was escorting because she has a 14-year-old kid living there and she's selling her butt. And she never paid her bills. She just took more drugs. So, what I did? I talked to a couple people who were like, well, listen, who cares? Coochie's coochie. Go back with her and enjoy the ride. So I did. I went back and, it was, I let her work for a day and then we'd hang out for 2 days. She'd make enough money. And then, we put her back up on Backpage. I don't know if you guys remember that, but that was Donald Trump ended up having that taken down. But, she would post on Backpage $12 a day. And, with her being so beautiful, it was $175 for a half hour. So, I was like, work, work, work. And that's pathetic. But, I was like, okay, I can separate love and feelings. And I couldn't. So that went on for quite some time until the undercovers came to our apartment and tried to set us up. And and it ended up badly once again. And Chris and I ended up separating again. I went to jail. I got out of jail. I ended up landing a job at a bar called Cheers out here. Bill probably knows that. And I was at Conrad's out here out in Sunrise, Florida. And once again, I became a rock star there, and Crystal and I weren't together, and I ended up dating a girl 20 years younger than me, and she was beautiful. And then Crystal wanted to come back in my life, and I took her back, and I left this girl. It was just, I was just a mess. And then I was sleeping with both of them, and then I ended up dating Christy, who was the one who had $140,000 a year, and then I was sleeping with all three of them, okay, even sometimes in the whole day. And guess what? They all knew it, and they didn't care. We just want to make sure that we can. You know what I mean? So I don't know whether people think that I'm so special because I'm not, but other people think I am. And, my mother told me a long time ago, walk in places like you own it. She's like, and I promise you everyone's going to think you're the owner. And I do. And when I walk in, we're still today, I always get that. Everyone's like, who's that? Because I always held my head high. Whether I was insecure or not, I made sure that I held my head high. And I just tried to.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to stop you there. And we're going to go back to the panel. But I just want to say to you, there's so much more to you than the outside. And,
absolutely.
It's such a shame that it has taken up until now for people to really see that. And what you're doing tonight is so brave and so, it's going to touch a lot of men that are struggling with the same thing and they can't talk about it.
Right.
And they're hurting. You don't realize the women you're hurting in this, what you're doing. They're
right.
Probably have their own issues because they're attracted to that. So, I just want the listeners to know that there's so many dynamics that happen when we grow up with child abuse or neglect or we're exposed to things. And, you get into these relationships to work out those issues if you don't heal. So we encourage you to look at the NASCA.org website, NAASCA.org. There's tons of resources there for the listeners. So let me go back to the panel. Let's go to Bill first in Florida.
Thanks, Linda, and thank you, Michael, again. I don't want to mislead people that my life got on the straight and narrow since I got clean and sober all those years ago. It didn't, especially in the areas of living life, which means my career, and my attempt at relationships and raising a family and all those things. I mean, I fumbled my way through it. I didn't drink or use again, and I was trying to improve my life again, but it was not a straight line. And I keep telling people this. You don't expect a straight line. You're not going to have it. You're going to have ups and downs and backs and forths. The current relationship I have is, I think it's 11 years old, and I couldn't be happier, and I don't think my wife would be happier either. But that it took many, many, many relationships to get this relationship. And I was already, 20-something years clean and sober, 25 years, something like that, clean and sober when I met her. And I'm telling you, I had a lot of relationships with women. Again, still the attempt was to find whatever was right and comfortable for Bill, and I did it in a screwed up way all the time. I picked the wrong people a lot. I did the wrong things a lot. And you know, I did have one other marriage once to a girl that I was with off and on for about 13, 14, 15 years, the result of which is a daughter who's now 30. But I knew after we got married and had our daughter, I almost instantly knew I'd made a big mistake. And so I left the house when my daughter was only like 2 years old, because it was going to be better for her. We were fighting so much and so forth. And we had shared custody for years. And that was not a successful relationship. I mean, the success in it is we both created a daughter together who we both love, but we didn't have the relationship that we wanted, neither one of us. So I'm just saying, you know, your sharing of these stories of the different women that you saw and so forth, I don't want people to think that that's not the way it is. That's the way it is until finally we figure out what it is we need and want and what it is we're capable of giving as well. To the other party, you know. So I really appreciate your sharing tonight, Michael.
Thank you. And I just want to make sure you guys know that I'm not – please don't think I'm bragging. I'm not at all. I'm just a friend of mine that texted me and he said it sounds like that. I just want to make that perfectly clear. I'm not bragging. I'm just trying to get the point across of how powerful, you know, with just the way you look and you talk can really, really get you to be able to manipulate women. It's insane. It really is. So that's – I just want to make sure no one thinks that I'm bragging, because trust me, I'm not.
No, we get that, and it sounds – and you're doing a great job. I mean, it's the honesty that's going to impress people who are listening tonight. That's the basic thing, you know, the honesty. So thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Okay, Darlene in Tennessee.
Yes, it takes a lot of strength and courage to admit the faults and it's not our fault about what happened to us, but we are responsible for our actions, whatever we do when we're older or whatever. But you know, it works the same with the males as it did the females, as far as, you know, some of the feelings and some of the desires of the heart and things, you know. I'm sure I know somebody personally that's hurt a lot of men because she was just going around from one man to the next, you know, and all, you know. So it works both ways with that. So I don't want it to sound like dogging just men, because there's and this ain't about dogging either. This is about facing what child abuse has done to our lives.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thanks, Darlene.
Thank you.
I love what Darlene just said, because, you know, when I was younger and, you know, I was drinking, it was the first time in my life that I had power, because when I was a child, my father molested me. I repressed the memories. But when I got older, I saw that I had power, and I used that to hurt men. I didn't care who I hurt. If you were going to, you know, you're going to get involved with me, I'm just going to hurt you. You're not going to hurt me. And that was my mantra. So it does work both ways. And it's all related to what we experience as children. That's what I want to get the listeners to really understand, is that this is all based on because how you were raised.
Right. No, right. Exactly.
One question that I want to say, tell you, I'm sorry about the baby you lost, because I lost four children. And even though, you know, she chose to do that, that for you was still a great loss.
No, it was. It was.
Right.
Now, let me tell you
about that. So I'm going to let you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I did have another abortion and a miscarriage also at 19 years old with the girl Sherry I was with. Now, my grandmother obviously is against abortion. Her being a Christian woman, she's like, I'm not letting you rock a kid at 19 years old and letting you go through what your mother went through. So she actually paid for that one and made me get rid of it. And it probably was a good thing. But, so I've lost about three that I know of. And I don't know if I have kids. I could. I mean, I've had, 2 minutes of sex with people and never even caught their first name and walked away and never saw them again. I mean, that's, just how it was. It was bad.
Right.
So, but I'm thinking.
Sure, go ahead. I'm going to let you take it wherever you want to take it. We have about 20 minutes left. So wherever you want to take it, and then we'll do one more round with the panel.
Oh. Okay. That's pretty much it, with the sexual thing. I when I went to Meridian, Mississippi, I was doing that all over again. And, who can I sleep with? And, how many can I sleep with? It was just always a game to me, and along with the feeling thing. But I do realize now that I've, and I'm older and I haven't gotten in a relationship. I've worked on myself a little bit. I do take a few steps forward and a few steps back still. I'm not perfect. I don't respond like I used to respond to a lot of situations, and when I do, I realize that that's not gross. But, I know that my next relationship, I will not cheat on that person. There's no doubt in my mind. I will never do that again. I think it's disgusting when people tell me they gotta do it at my age. I really do. It's just, I'm like, why would you do that at our age? Just tell the person, hey, I don't think it's working out. I don't feel comfortable, and I'm going to go sleep with so-and-so. It may hurt, but why lie? And I see it all the time. My friends, sisters, and the husband was cheating, blah, blah, blah. And listen, I was in an adulterous affair. I wrecked the family. Guess what? After it was done and over with, and she ended up marrying another guy after we were broken up, I thought to myself, I'm like, could I have ever trusted that person anyway? Well, she's screwing me behind her husband's back, and then I become her husband, and I have to always worry about her doing that to me. I don't understand people's way of thinking. Like, what makes you think that that person's not going to do that to you? And,
exactly.
That's how I looked at that. And, I don't know. It's just, once again, in that adulterous affair, I wanted to be with this person because of their success, So I've had all the wrong motives. I've had their morals my whole life. I finally am putting together morals. I'm finally sticking to a lot of the things that I say I'm going to do. I think that's very important to make sure that I follow through. And I have friends who keep me accountable on that. If I owe you $10 and I tell you I'm going to pay you $10 tomorrow at 10 a.m., I need to have that $10 tomorrow at 10 a.m., that's definitely helping me along, And like I said, I've never really had men in my life to guide me, so I didn't know how to treat a woman. I treated them like my friends treated them, I just, picked up off that. I mean, I didn't even know how to shave, I know how to take care of my skin because I grew up with women. But, the mask I had on yesterday when I talked to you. But, besides that, I just never had that father figure in my life. So, as of right now, I mean, yes, I'm craving, a little bit of intimacy. I am going to New York Wednesday morning to see someone. And, it could work out, it couldn't, but I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens, with that. But, it's tough. I do want to have meaning. I know for a fact that, here's the other thing I want to share with you guys, is when you've had the orgies and you slept with anybody you ever wanted to sleep with, and you slept with, stars and tens and twelves and, the dimes, and you've done it all, it's very, very hard to have an orgasm as a male, or this is me, because nothing really excites me anymore. You know, like I tell people, what are you going to do, a backflip, you know, from the chandelier and land on my, you know, my dingling, and then, you know, that's going to excite me? I mean, it's just, I realize that having meaningless sex is just meaningless, and what's going to be different, you know, from the next 10 to the last 10? So I'm looking for that meaning. I'm looking for that intimacy. I've had it a couple times in my life, and I did enjoy it a lot, bringing God into the bedroom at the same time, making it very spiritual. That can be an amazing, amazing experience, you know, with the person that you're with and love. So that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
In that aspect.
You do it the right way, and you don't get caught up in the old behavior. That's the important part.
Yeah, you know, but that's the other thing I'm a little worried about is, excuse me, is that I go and see this girl, I'll stay up there for 4 days, and we have sex nonstop. What's going to happen when I get back here? You know?
Right.
Yeah. So
right. You're opening up that old. It's almost like going. You have to look at it like you're going back to cocaine in a way, because
right.
It could awaken that addiction in you, and you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're correct. I'm praying about it.
Okay.
You know, I really am. So I'm pretty sick. You know, you and I've shared a little bit, Linda. I'm going to definitely put it down in the book and, you know, and talk about that. I just don't feel comfortable sharing a lot of the things, you know, tonight. There are even sicker and deeper things that, you know, that go on with me, with my sexual behaviors. And but it'll definitely be down on paper, and people will be able to see it, you know, one day here in the near future. And then hopefully people will relate to that too as well. So.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the book you want to write.
Okay. So, you know, people have always told me, you know, that I should have a, you know, a, everywhere I've worked, they're like, you should really have a reality TV show. They're like, you know, everything that goes on with you, it's just, you know, you can't make it up, you know, and people see it, you know, that what happens in my life. And, you know, so I just, when you contacted me and you told me, you guys, one of my posts, and you said that you'd like me to share, I was like, wow. So I told a couple people. I have a very close woman in my life who's a clairvoyant, and, you know, she's amazing. And she actually one night told me, she's like, listen, she's like, why don't you get a pen and a paper, set at your computer. She's like, and I want you to write a book, you know. And I was like, wow, it's funny you say that, because I've always thought about doing it. But I was just going to write a book about my mother's murder. So now, though, I'm going to incorporate my life with it, with my mother's murder, to where I end up now. And the thing is there's not an ending to the story yet. So, see, the ending to my story, I thought was supposed to be, you know, this is how it's been. Mother murdered. My father died of a drug overdose. My other sister died of a drug overdose. And what am I going to die of? Suicide, overdose. I mean, that would have been the two things that I put in there. The one good thing, though, too, as well, is I know that ending is going to be much better. I don't have an ending for it, but I can still start writing it. But, yeah, so I want to get that out there and be able to help people. I was going to start a nonprofit in 2009 called Heal Our Families to help families of murdered victims. I became friends with the son of the man who murdered my mother, and he was clean for years, and he's still clean now, 15 years. So I wanted to hang out with him and ask him questions. And, you know, he told me, you know, a lot of things that I, he told me, you know, my father gave me the car that day. The smell in the car was so bad. He said the dog pooped in it. He's like, I know my father killed your mother, and blah, blah, blah. It was just, you know, some horrible, horrific things that he ended up telling me about it. But I tell you, when we hit the stage and we would speak, and I introduced myself and I said, hello, everyone. My name is Michael Caruso. My mother was murdered. And he'd get up there and say, hello, everyone. I'm Travis Finding. My father murdered his mother. They almost would fall out of their chairs. So, yeah, Dateline came to do a story on us, and we had a big old dinner. And they didn't air it because we weren't focusing enough on the crime. So, and then, like I was telling you, Linda, Good Morning America, Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Phil wanted us on. And I went and smoked crack and was nowhere to be found. So, I put that aside, and I didn't want to, you know, everyone to bringing that up, because I know once that I start speaking about this publicly and it does get, you know, out there, because it will, with that story in mind as well, people are going to dig up the dirt on me, you know, and they're going to, you know, they're going to know the things. But, hey, you know what? As long as I admit it, you can't use it against me. That's how I look at
right.
it. So.
You're saying it out loud. You're sharing your truth. You're sharing, you know, the extent of how bad it can be. So no one can use it against you when you've already put it out there. You're not.
Right.
They can't expose you.
That's great. Let's go to the panel now that this is probably a good time. We'll go back to the panel one more time. So let's go to Bill in Florida.
I think all of us many of us have a story inside of us that would make a worthwhile book, but you really have a story that would make a worthwhile book. I got to say, among all the stories that I've heard, there's an awful lot of material there. And yes. I would simply want to be cautioning you that, you know, we want to make sure that whatever we do here tonight, for example, is geared towards making sure folks understand there are solutions and there are things that you can do. And there's progress that can be made for anybody, no matter how far down they've gone. And you certainly have that part of your story down. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's the only thing. I wouldn't want it to be a drag. I'd want it to be an uplifting kind of ordeal.
Absolutely.
But other than that, you got a great story, Michael. You should talk to somebody about it.
I will. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, Darlene.
I just wanted to say that is so good that you are writing your book. I'm working on my second book as well at the moment.
No.
It takes a lot but I'm having to be safe and sorry because my family is still violent towards me. They are around me or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for safety's sake, I'm using my author name, Darlene.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to do that for safety's sake, you know.
Yes. Well, good for you. I think it's going to work out great.
So it takes a lot of courage doing what you're doing, and I want to thank you for doing that and can't wait to get for you to get that book done.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darlene. We have about less than 15 minutes left, I'm not sure where you want to take it to the end. How are you doing now? What's going on in your life now?
Okay, so let me share that with you guys. So, you know, when I went to prison, they told me that I had a heart attack. and they said, how bad was the heart attack that you had? And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, well, you had a heart attack. And I was like, okay, I don't remember having a heart attack. I also had a mini stroke in 2016 that was not diagnosed, but I am diagnosing it myself because I was singing on stage and all of a sudden my jaw dropped to the side and I'm like, why started going like this? And I came off stage and I went up to my girlfriend. I'm like, I think so. I just had a mini stroke. And she looked at me. She's like, oh my God, what's wrong with your face? What's wrong with the pitch of your voice? I said, let's get out of here now. We left and, you know, I ended up eating, a Xanax and calling some friends that have had strokes that are, you know, completely can't even use their left side. And they're like, you need to go to the hospital. I decided I didn't want to go to the hospital. I went home and ate my Xanax. I let her do the rest of the blow. And I got up the next morning, I started doing the cocaine again. But I've been safe ever since. And I tell you, out of all the drugs that I've done, and I tell people this, my band members will laugh, my ex-band members, most of them are in recovery too. But I tell people, I've done more drugs than the band Aerosmith put together, okay? And that may be exaggerating a little, but I've done a lot of drugs. And my blood work at the hospital, or when I get my blood work done, I am 100% completely healthy. And I am just, you know, there's just a blessing on my life as well as there would be a curse because God wants me to do something, boy. Let me tell you, because, you know, I have been spared. I've been beaten. I've been stabbed. I've been left for dead, and I'm still here to talk about it. And share my experience, strength, and hope, and help people because I do have this aura about me that draws people in, and they're just drawn to me, and it's great, you know. Some of the posts that I put up there about depression and stuff like that, I had a girl call me the other night, I was telling you, Linda, and started asking me, why does this happen to me, and blah, 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 and, you know, I basically told her, what was your part? We're not victims, and, go ahead and share that with me, and I can help you, and it was nice, you know, for people to reach out like that to me. You know, what I have learned in the past year is that my stage is not being on Facebook and taking my shirt off because nobody's buying personal training from me. They just want to see me with my shirt off. So, you know, I pushed away from that a little bit. But how am I doing drug-wise? I've been off crack cocaine now since February of 2019. And I do go to the doctor for other medications at the moment, you know, that you and I've talked about. But I'm definitely weaning off those as well now. So I'm good. We could all be in a little bit better place after this pandemic, right? But besides that, I try to make the best of it. Maybe gained a little weight, but I'm pretty healthy. You know, I do smoke cigarettes. I need to stop that. It's disgusting, but you know, I have some very good people in my life, and including you, Linda. And I'm very glad that God put you in my life, and Bill as well, because nothing happens like coincidence to me. It's all for a reason. Okay. And you know, who knows? You know, maybe you'll be able to point me in the right direction of writing this book, because I know you've written one yourself. So, you know.
What would you say to the listeners? What would you say to the young men that are listening right now that may have been sexually abused?
Wow, that's a tough one. I don't know. I'd probably say don't bury it like I buried it for years and then use it to your advantage as you get older and take it out on women just because someone else, you know, sexually abused you. I would definitely probably, you know, definitely go with a professional. I really recommend a professional who's had it done to them. That's what I think is the best. Just like you, Linda, you know, you can relate to my story because I can share that with you. And, you know, yes, I do agree that the men should share with the men, but at the same time, you know, I was brought up by women. So, you know, I share some of this with women and, I always tell them, listen, I know I'm not supposed to be doing this. Like I said that with you the other day, but you're okay with it. But, you know, I think talking about it and getting it out is definitely going to help you, not become that sex addict or, you know, the next Jeffrey Dahmer or whoever. I mean, because you got to look at, you know, those people that were sexually abused as well. And, you know, they definitely went down a whole different road than we went down.
Right. If you don't heal from it, then you act it out in your life. And you take other people down with you.
Well, that's my biggest thing is now, and I'm glad you said that, is that, you know what, if I didn't work on myself, I'm going to take the same crap from the last relationship I was in and bring it into the new relationship, and I'm going to wreck that one too, because, you know, I'm the common denominator in every relationship that I've been in that hasn't worked, okay? So whether I pick sick people and I'm sick people, doesn't matter. My actions are always the same. I've never had a girl that hasn't punched me in the face in a relationship, okay? That tells you something right there. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
Even Danielle, she's never hit a guy before, a little 27-year-old, and she punched me right in the face. She's like, I've never hit a guy before, but you. I just can get under your skin, though. You see what I mean? That's the thing with me, is that if there was a prize for being able to push your buttons and get to you, I would win every time. I mean, I will brag about that because it's disgusting, but I am just very good at really getting to people, and it's not good, but I was a master at that. And, they've all retaliated. You know, it says in the big book, you step on the toes of our fellows, you know what I mean? And, they get mad, and then you wonder why. Because you're trying to make everything work for you, selfish, opportunist, you know?
Imagine if you took your gifting, like you said, that you know the gift that you have, and used it to help others, used it to inspire, to encourage, to build up others. Imagine the difference in your life.
I agree. You know what? I mean, they say the opposite of manipulation, which I'm very good at, is being creative, and I'm very creative in everything I do. So I do need to target that area. I was talking about that yesterday. I'm definitely going to be looking at that and seeing what I can do.
Awesome. Okay, let's do one more round with the panel and let them say goodnight to you. And then I'm going to let you talk a little bit more. Okay, let's go to Bill in Florida, my co-host and the founder of NASCA.
Thank you, Linda and Michael. Yeah, this is the point, I think, of the whole show tonight, is no matter where you are, there is a good chance, if you take it, but you have to work on it, to change your own behavior and your own choices and your own decisions, and that in turn will change your life and how you feel about your life. Your life will get better, and you'll feel better about who you are. Michael
yep.
feels better about Michael because he has made this decision that he's, no matter what, he's going to stay away from drugs, he's going to do better with women and so forth, all these things that he's decided. And sometimes, yep. you know, we're not perfect at this. None of us are.
No.
It can take years to get to the place
right.
where you feel really, truly comfortable. But it's possible. And I'm an example of it. And I know there's
right.
a lot more, and Michael's well on his way to that. So no matter how far down the scale you've gone, there's a way back. And,
there you go.
You know, I mean, the only reason I did this, not because I enjoyed it, but because I wanted to
right.
have a better, you know, I wanted to feel better about myself. That was why I did drugs, too. It's why I had
Agreed.
Sex. I wanted to feel better
yep, yep.
about myself. It turns out none of those things don't fix it, but changing my own behavior, my own attitudes, my own decisions,
yep.
and so forth does. So my
yes.
actions are most important. Thank you, Michael, very much.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. Talking to you.
Let me pose this to either Michael or Bill, whoever wants to answer it. What would you say to the female listeners out there who are going for men like you guys were acting when you were younger? What would you say to them?
I would say, I'll go, Bill, real quick. I would definitely say you got to look deeper than looks, because if you're going ahead and you're looking for that guy who, you know, the Fabio or whatever, I mean, that was my little idol when I was growing up, you know, you are missing, you know, the mark, because that person could be, you know, the person that I was, you know, devious, sexual and manipulative, and just wants to sleep with you, and I'll promise you the world, and you'll never get it. So, you know, I would definitely say that, you know, you need to look a little deeper. So I am so much more now than the face, and that's what I tell people. So, you know, I'm definitely going to be a better person in a relationship when I get in again, and I won't be as selfish anymore as I used to be.
Awesome. Thank you. Let's Darlene in Tennessee say final comments and good night.
Yes, there's two things I want to bring up. I want to say that people need to be like the people who are sharing their stories at NASCA to come on out and discuss it. Don't silence yourself. Speak out. You know, that's
right.
If we don't speak out, that's giving the perpetrators the power back, in my opinion.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
And I wanted to also remind that, you know, about the meeting that NASCA that they do tomorrow. They come to the site and go to Zoom and go to the meetings.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Darlene.
Tomorrow at what time?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's get her back. I'm sorry, Darlene.
Oops.
I cut you off.
Yeah, could somebody say about time and stuff that the support group is and everything for the people?
Yes. At 2 p.m. tomorrow, we have a support group. And if you go to NASCA.org, I believe, Bill, it's on the website.
Okay.
It's still,
is that correct?
Right at the top of the website. Yeah, you click on the one link, register once, and then you'll be informed about the meetings, which happen 3 times a week, and you'll know about how to join them all.
Great. I got to
okay.
check it out for
Great.
Sure.
Okay. Michael, you have about 1 minute yet. What would you like to say in final closing comments?
You know, I just want to say thank you for having me. And, you know, this is the first time I've ever shared, you know, everything that's happened. So I know it's a little all over the board, so forgive me. But I hope everyone got something out of it to help them a little bit. And, you know, I definitely, you know, want to, like I said, start the nonprofit. And, you know, I started writing the book slowly but surely. And, you know, I do kind of need a ghostwriter if anybody's out there. So, but anyway, I'm just very grateful that, you know, hopefully this has touched some people. And even if it touched just one person, then, hey, you know, we did a good job tonight.
Right. You did an excellent job. I am so grateful. And your story is so unique and so intense that I'm sure it's going to touch a lot of men and women and, you know, give them hope. So thank
yeah.
you so much for that. And, you know, please visit NASCA.org, our website,
yep.
NASCA.org, And I just want to say thank you for everyone listening. And there is hope. There is help. Please reach out to us. Someone is always there. So good night and God bless. Again, I'm Linda Vitti from New Jersey, and we thank you for listening. Good night.
Good night, guys. Bye-bye.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.